thank you for joining us for the supplemental cast where GPR listeners are, well, treated. I will say treated to be joined by the production team and co-directors of the upcoming documentary project, Doctor Who Am I? We're joined by Matthew Jacobs and Vanessa Yule. How are you folks?
Hello.
Hi, we're fine. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, I want to make sure that we get started with a basic understanding of the project itself. Now, though people can get a little bit of a walkthrough on it from the fundraiser page that's associated with the filmmaking, how would you describe what this documentary is explicitly focused upon?
Well, it's an intimate portrait of the American Doctor Who fan, which is basically told from my point of view. I was the writer-director of the 96 TV movie. As I come back into the world, I stayed away from it for about 20 years. And we've been shooting it since February. And it's turning into something really quite beautiful.
So you're still actually in the filming stage, you're still gathering material, conducting additional interviews and speaking with more fans as you travel.
Well, we've wrapped the main part of the filming. We shot at Gallifrey in February. We continued filming through the summer. And then we were just in Long Island in November. And we had a wonderful reunion with Paul McGann. And so we wrapped up the main part of the filming and we're in post-production now. And that's why we're running our Indiegogo campaign to help us pull through.
That is obviously where the majority of the cost is associated, right? Now, as you mentioned, you've been filming at a number of these U.S. conventions, including Gallifrey 1, and we saw you most recently at Long Island Doctor Who. Now, both of these, as you said, have had members of the 96 film cast and crew in attendance. So we got a chance to chat with E.G. So at Long Island year prior. Daphne Ashbrook is a fixture at the conventions. We love having her there. And as you mentioned, Paul himself coming to the Long Island conventions. Now, since this is a fan-centric project or something that focuses on the American fan, is the presence of the talent from the 96 film, are they incorporated into the documentary as well, or is it something for them as well as us?
Oh yeah, most definitely. I mean, Paul is completely on board, and we have a long interview with him, and we follow him very much at the LI Who convention. We were there. But the film really isn't about the show. The film is really about the nature of American fandom. And what is so unique, really, is that this is a British show that has exploded in America. You've got millions of fans stretched across the internet. And not only do we explore My Journey Back In, but we also explore how and why this is happening and what is it about the American psyche that makes it so, so excited by the concept of Doctor Who?
Wonderful. That was actually one thing that I wanted to discuss with you is, since you're at a very, well, a very unique intersection of what is inherently a very iconic British television program, and it has this rapidly expanding American audience, what do you think particularly is it about the chemistry or the construct of the Doctor Who program that bridges the Atlantic so successfully?
That's a really good question. What do you think, Vanessa?
Well, every time we ask someone, we ask two main questions. Who is the Doctor in you, and when were you the Doctor in real life? And from all the fans that we've asked, we get a different answer from everybody. So it's a show that's unique where people can find that personal element for themselves, and they find themselves in the Doctor. Answers range from, you hear, of course, doesn't use guns, he uses his brains. But we talked with a woman who was able to relate with her son and get over the death of her husband because of the doctor. We've met a firefighter in Long Island who was at, was there on 9/11. And for him, it was being able to connect with his fellow firemen, kind of, even discuss that idea of what could you do if you could go back in time and change the future. We have, Paul has his own answer. Daphne has her own hands. And it's just so fascinating to see what it is that people love about this character. And maybe it's America itself, or just this passionate country who we just are able to define ourselves in a way. We're discovering that, but everyone has their own unique answer.
Everyone does. There's an optimism about America. There's a passion that I think links innately with the Doctor. Also, Doctor Who is a pretty unique hero. He's not like your average American hero. I don't think there is a similar kind of hero in American culture. But obviously, that hero is needed by people. And so... there's a large following. I mean, in Britain, we call nerds and geeks, we call them anoraks, or they were called that in the past. And we found this isn't a word that's familiar to the American population, so we decided to call our production company American Anorak. And the idea is really that the anoraks are taking over the world, and they are. And so... Doctor Who, very much, even more so, I think, than Star Trek, which reflects an imperialistic kind of politic behind it. Doctor Who reflects something that came out of the 1960s psychedelic love child kind of thing, where you could have a hero who didn't get the girl at the end of each show, so that people who didn't get the girl could say, yeah, there I am being a hero. So there was that. There's that aspect to it.
That was a wonderful insight. Thank you. I appreciate that. Now, as far as the project itself, and you said that you're at the post-production phase, which obviously is where a lot of the bills come due. Where has the project itself, in the goals that it's laid out, how has it progressed? Where do we stand right now?
At the moment, we're just entering the final phases of post-production. What we're aiming for is to have the film out and ready for the 20th anniversary of my Doctor, of the Eighth Doctor. So that means we have to move very fast. We've collected together a massive amount of material. We've been cutting it together into its feature form. Our hope is that we will find a strong distributor in companies like Netflix, maybe even Facebook if they move into content. Our hope is that, and that we will obviously, and we've got the expressed interest and strong support of a distribution company in Britain called Independent, who did Exit Through the Gift Shop. Who've done, good work, and they also distributed a film of mine in the past. So in short, we've got a lot of hard work ahead of us, and the Indiegogo campaign is really important in this respect, because it means we can completely clear our decks and get down to work on it. And we're really pleased. Initially, the Indiegogo campaign, we reached our primary goal quite quickly. Of 10,000. So officially the campaign is a success. What we're hoping to do now is to raise that extra bump, that extra level that really means we don't need to do, anything else. We can just focus on finishing this film.
Okay. Now you mentioned the Indiegogo campaign, so that I'm assuming that if we want to let people know how they can be a part of the, or consider themselves to be a contributing part of the film's production and success, how would they go about doing so? Is it as simple as just searching Indiegogo, or do you have
search
a site?
Indiegogo. I'm pretty sure you guys are going to put up a link.
We will.
There's and you go there, you can read about the film, And you don't even have to put money down. Do you know what I mean? It's a case of giving us that support and spreading the word. We're interested, because this is a film about the fan, we're interested in the fans being involved in the making of it. We're interested, actually, in everybody trying to answer those two questions. Who is the doctor in you? When has that doctor shown himself? When have you done something like doctor?
I love
the premise. Anything else, Vanessa?
No, you've hit all the points.
And we'll make sure for social networks. I'm sure that I believe there's a Twitter account associated with the project itself. We'll make sure that that's referenced too, so that people can tweet and retweet and keep the word going in there as well. So if all goes well, I know that you want to have everything prepared for the anniversary point for the 96 film, you know, coming into 2016, which is on the calendar. When does that mean that we, the viewing public, may get a chance to see the documentary ourselves in a perfect world? Okay.
The aim would be for you guys to be start seeing it in May. I think realistically, that's when the premieres will be. I think realistically, you know, Ken Deep wants to pull something together in Long Island. I'm going to try and pull something together in Britain. I think we'd do a couple of big launches then, and realistically we'd be talking about this over the summer. It would start becoming available to the public. But from the moment of the premiere, that would be the time when hopefully, depending upon the distributors we're working with, the people who have signed off on the Indiegogo, they're going to get, obviously, first look. And so that's the big thing I think about. It's basically treat it like coming along and pre-booking your stream or your DVD. That's the best way of looking at it. We've got someone doing social media who did social media at a couple of conventions and some Comic Cons, and she's great. And there's going to be hopefully quite a lot of activity. Our objective is to try and hit that mainstream of Who fandom here. We've succeeded in reaching a lot of people because they're the people who are making the film.
Absolutely. Now, I know with that aggressive schedule that you've laid out for yourself, we have the next, what is it, the 27th iteration of Gallifrey 1 coming around in L.A. next February. So we're, well, you know, two months hence, not less than. So you've already done all of your shooting. Is there going to be any representation at that convention? We'll be able to seek you or any of your minions out to discuss how things are coming along with the project?
I think so. I live in LA, so it's easy for me. And I would like to at least give updates and let people know that we're still making the movie. It's coming along, and to just keep the dialogue going.
Wonderful. Well, we'll have to seek you there, because I know at least two of our three intrepid crew will be there. So we'll have to seek Evanus and see how things are coming along. Again, we will make sure that we share all the information on the episode posting for how you can get involved with the Indiegogo project. It's as simple as going to Indiegogo.com and seeking and searching for Doctor Who Am I, and it'll be the most obvious answer that will come back to your search results. But we'll put direct links in as well. I do have one question I'm going to make it two, because you can choose to answer them both. You can choose to discard them. But I know we often discuss how unfortunate it is that the world never got more time seeing the Eighth Doctor on their screens. We got a little bit of a gift about a year and a half ago with the Night of the Doctor webisode release that Mr. Moffat was kind enough to give us. And of course, we've been living wonderfully through all of Paul's Big Finish audio work. But does this film address any of the circumstances that may have revolved around Fox's decision not to pick up the program in the late 90s? Or is it just another topic for another time?
Well, we've been talking about this. Vanessa and I have been talking about this. We did go and interview Philip Siegel. we did go and interview Philip Siegel, which, of course, is a very integral part of the movie, because I haven't seen him in 20 years. And one of the subjects that came up with him was, why isn't there more of a presence? Why hasn't there been more of a presence for the film? And he talked about the fictitious relationship between Universal and the BBC. And one of the things that, you know, and Universal own Daphne's character. They own all the original characters that were created for the TV movie. And, of course, one of the things that we've been thinking about doing is going along to Universal and saying, do you realize that you have Doctor Who? Because Philip said they probably don't even know they've got it. And so that's one of the things we thought of bringing in. Obviously, because it's from my point of view, there's a lot of talk in the film about different ideas relating to the Doctor, the whole half-human thing, the romantic, those kind of things. And indeed, my own past with my father, who played a Doctor in an American Doctor Who. He played Doc Holliday in The Gunfighters. Those kind of things where we end up coming full circle, and at L.I. Who, they put on a show of Gunfighters with all those scenes. It was very strange indeed. So I don't know, what else do we do that addresses the issue of, well, I think there is a chance, by the way, I think there is a chance of Paul actually coming back. I've been looking at the show recently, and they've gone so dislocated in terms of time and continuity that and the Doctor has become such a soppy date. You know, he is really in love with everything he sees. That I think the door is well and truly open for Paul to dip in and out of the story. That's my feeling. What else do you think, Vanessa? What else do we cover?
Well, definitely the TV movie is covered in the circumstances around the movie. You're very candid about it, about your feelings of it not being picked up. Also, Philip Siegel is very candid. It's, I think fans will be quite pleased. It's not like we're sugarcoating anything. It's we're telling the story as it was and as it is. And also there's a discussion of, well, how do you feel now? Do you feel vindicated in a way of how the Doctor, the Eighth Doctor, has sort of come back in a new form in the new series. He kisses now. Is he a hybrid, half human? You know, we discuss that for sure in the documentary.
Excellent. Well, I think that's just an added incentive to want to see it. I mean, there's obviously just the celebration of the fandom itself, which is something that we always hold near and dear, and we always remark on it whenever we attend the cons. But anything that's going to give us a little bit more insight into what happened in the production in 96 and the gap, that'd be phenomenal.
Paul talks very lucidly, I think, about the Doctor inside him, and I think that's a fascinating conversation for fans to hear. You know, the conversations that we have, they go beyond just the fan thing. They go much deeper at times in terms of bringing out what's behind it. And I think that's something that by itself has earned us the, arts nonprofit status that we have. So at the risk of sounding pretentious, there is a level to this movie that goes beyond just the show, and therefore I think is interesting to fans, especially in terms of a portrait that's never been drawn before.
Very true. Yeah, and it's something where, you know, we as viewers, we've remarked on this on the Arcast a number of times. We enjoy problem solving. That's something that we love a puzzle, just as our titular character does. So when we have something like this gap in our viewing history, we want to find out everything about it. We want to solve that puzzle. We want all of the pieces to be laid out on the table. And this sounds like an opportunity for us to have a couple pieces we may not have been witness to before. So definite advantage there. One last thing I'll throw at you. because again, you know, we're fascinated by some of these things, the, you know, the Geppetto at work and so forth. I know David and Marty from Who on Who got a chance to talk to you about this about a month or so ago on their cast about the half human discussion. So we're not going to drag that topic up because that's okay. That's a powder keg in and of itself. But we will ask this: were there instances during your writes and rewrites for the 96 film where executives may have asked you to change or even omit certain aspects of what we consider to be inherent nature of the program, or what we consider sort of classic Doctor Who lore or canon, in some sort of an attempt to simplify the story or gear it towards an American audience?
Well, that's a really good question. And when I say that's a really good question, it means I normally need more time to think about the answer.
Fair.
The answer is, it was a different time. Classic lore, the canon, the dogma, if you like, was still in a sort of lava-like state. In as much as the show had ended, it was about 5 years after American fandom was still kept on growing during that time, but was still fairly small. So I would say the main defender of the faith, as it were, was Philip Siegel. In terms of what I was told, I was given pretty much a free hand. They were in a rush to make this movie. I really did have the contractual limitations of, you know, a couple of months to write it. So there wasn't much back and forth. When I came up with things that were fresh in terms of the background of the Doctor, Philip would say, that's new. But I think that's okay, Matthew. Let's go with it. And he would cite some pre-law like a lawyer might, you know, well, in this episode that was mentioned, so yes, it's okay. And that would be the kind of thing he would say. I was never really given a list of do's and don'ts. They bought my basic pitch, which was Doctor Who Am I? They bought that, and they realized that I wanted to write a film about the Doctor rediscovering his identity. What they did ask for was lots of action and adventure. So we ended up having a car chase. The only car chase I think that happens on the flat in San Francisco. Where there are no hills. We ended up with sort of crazy sort of bits of action that sometimes got added on, like the whole big fight in the cloister room at the end of the movie. Wasn't in the script until the last minute. The big fight was much simpler. Those kind of things came out of the demands of network TV, not just in the States, to a degree, I think in Britain as well. They weren't alone in asking for big action stuff.
Interesting. Okay. Might have been more a sign of the times than necessarily the target viewing audience.
I think the BBC were hoping at best that they'd find something like an X-Files. They were excited by the idea that we were shooting in Vancouver, and we were using primarily the X-Files crew. And so that's what they were hoping for. So they brought on Joe Wright, who was the main executive from the BBC. She was there, you know, while we were shooting. And, you know, she was saying, you know, let's bring this up to date. We don't want something from the 80s. Let's try and make this more like, you know, like the X-Files. You know, she wanted it to have that kind of edge. The X-Files was a big buzzword with the BBC, just as it was anywhere else in the world at that time. And so they were very much involved in trying to, and probably even more so than in America, the BBC really weren't keen on picking up anything from the 80s show. They were the ones who were fighting us bringing Sylvester in. They didn't want that. They openly said, nobody's going to know who he is. We don't want any association with that. And they really hated Doctor Who at that time. So it was really Fox with, you know, Trevor Walton, who's British, who ran Fox TV movies, and Philip, who's just like is like the Uber fan, who has changed. Actually, you'll really see it's interesting in the movie because you see how he's changed from being the Uber fan that regarded it as his mission in life to keep the Doctor alive. He's changed from that. He's grown up. He's different. Now he makes reality shows. Sorry.
Very successful ones.
Very successful ones, like Ice Truckers.
Deadliest Catch.
Deadliest Catch, yes. So anyway, it was those guys who were Trevor and Philip, who were absolutely religious about wanting us to sustain the Doctor. And it was the BBC who actually were and the Universe who were pulling in the other direction. And Universal, who just didn't give a toss because they had no idea what the Doctor was. You know, as long as it looked like it might make money, they were interested.
Mm. Well, I'm personally extremely eager to see the release when it comes into our hands in May, on time, fully funded. We will have no qualms, and it'll give us all the impetus to be able to launch through. Wonderful that it's coming to us during the break period too, because these long breaks that we have now that we've just had our Christmas episode airing and we're not going to see anything for quite some time, so the news stream is going to, you know, ebb down to a low trickle, and something like this and the conventions, the Galley One, the Li Who, and those things, those are our rejuvenations to keep the fandom's lifeblood pulsing. So this falls at just the perfect time for us to enjoy this. And on the 20th anniversary year of the film as well. So how could you possibly go wrong? Well, I'd like to thank you both, Vanessa Yule and Matthew Jacobs. Thank you so much for joining us here for this conversation. It's been fascinating, and it's got me wondering whether I should go back and consider second donations at this point. So
thank you for the donation. Thank you so much for doing this podcast with us. Seriously.
Absolutely.
I mean, I love the podcasts, but your podcast is really great.
Genuinely appreciate that. Well, we wish the project and yourselves both the absolute best of luck with everything, and we will be keeping close tabs with you to see how things progress as we go for our stretch goals.
Great.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful afternoon, folks.
You too. Have a good new year.
Cheers.
Happy New Year.